said excuse
boring. But this is good storytelling. You know what I'm saying? It's extremely good storytelling. Great writing and great pacing. Great structure, right? It really is great structure. Great time with the flashback. You know, great. They could have done that in the first episode, but they waited, right? They waited. They waited and they used it better. They serviced the story better, I think. I'd rather see them slowly let out who Gravik is. We don't need all of them in one shot, right? Obviously, we already know from the trailers he's going to become a Super Skrull.
Many independent people.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Okay, let's move on. Let's get this started.
Oh, we're actually live. I just figured I would fuck around for a minute and whatnot. Just leave you guys, let you talk.
Good. So, hey, folks.
No, I'm actually going to play the intro, folks. Don't worry. I just want to let Andres wax philosophical real quick, you know, and all that.
No, all we right. don't need
we intro. Have episode 3 to review for y'all.
How about this? Episode 3 is great.
I'll be one to sing an intro for us. Sing us a Star Wars intro.
Baby Ling, hang on. I'll just shit like. I'm going to call her. Hey, yo, how long? My child. This is not my child. No, it's not.
I don't know.
Nice child. Hey, you got to give me change.
I don't have
change. What happened to you?
That is a child, Andre.
What happened to you?
I don't know what happened. They said I got
raped! What?
Can you help me, please?
Can
you help me,
please? Oh my god. This is so what? This is
who taped her knee? Pat Riley?
Hey, yo, come on. I'm gonna help you right now. Come on.
Where
are
you gonna help me?
I'm gonna go get
I'm gonna help you out.
Hey, miss, you got a chance for a 20? You got a chance for a 20?
Yeah, it's right under my baby leg.
I don't know what's going on.
I'm about to help you right now. Relax, yo.
I am telling you, sir, I'm still mystified by how that chick manages to secure that baby leg like that and run around. Seriously, they should have had her on the Captain America Winter Soldier team and whatnot, production and whatnot, everything, right, for a costume design. Seriously, they should have put her on Shogun. Anyways, folks, good evening to all of those catching us live tonight on Monday evening, 4/8/24, right? Thanks to all of you who catch us, the non-live stream version of this video. And we are, of course, the MCU's Bleeding Edge Report, right? The only Monday titled show of our 3 shows a week on the MCU's Bleeding Edge YouTube channel podcast, hosted by myself, the creator and co-host of the MCU's Bleeding Edge, Jeff SAK True Knowledge, with my special guest co-host, Andres, the pop culture guy. And we are here to go ahead and start you right off with an S-Men 97 Episode 3 first review of this being Andres' review of an S-Men 97 episode, right? Before we get into The Ones Who Live and our final thoughts on the finale episode and the series and the budget and everything, and our Supergirl news and everything, and whatever other crazy shit that ends up on the menu for discussion. In the meantime, please consider, of course, liking, following, subscribing, all that good stuff. Turn on notifications on our YouTube channel so that you're aware when we're live. Because maybe you're not into X-Men 97 or The Ones Who Live, you might be into Shogun, right? Or one of our movie reviews or Fallout they're about to start covering. And I'm gonna have to beg Andres to come on Saturday to do the first episode with us. We can have ideas and beg. So Andres, pop culture guy, how are you, sir? Are you happy to be back on the MCU's Bleeding Edge Report, sir?
Yes. First off, it's great that we got more X-Men 97 to talk, which is great. Especially for this episode, because my boy, Mr. Sinister, has arrived, so it's really great to talk about that, which is, I'm so happy.
I am drinking Nutcracker, bitch. I'm getting nutcracked up in this motherfucker. You ready?
Okay, whatever that means. I mean, you should save that for Christmas. I mean, that'd be kind of funny. You know, it's like better the Christmas season is like Nutcracker.
This is some wino shit. This is like some of the shit they sell at the gas station that's all high alcohol content and shit. It's like 8% alcohol.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Kind of like those big drinks I drink, those Red Wickens. You know, those Red's Wickens I drinks? They're 8% alcohol, too.
Okay, okay.
Like malt liquor is high alcohol. You know what I mean?
Okay, you know? Makes sense.
Anyways, folks, Andre's a pop culture guy, and I did Captain America Winter Soldier last night. That's why I mentioned that earlier. But Andre, sir, X-Men 97 so far through episode 3. I know we've both watched ahead of episode 3. But pretty solid, huh?
Yeah, so far. I mean, it's been pretty good. I mean, I've been enjoying the show. It's been really fun. It's been great. The consistency of the writing and the characters has been awesome. Yeah, so everything has been top-notch. I mean, and first off, like, this show is just off the walls. Like, it just gives you everything that you like about the X-Men universe, which is great. And I'm very excited to talk about this episode, you know, because, I mean, if you don't know, yeah, the X-Men lore, you know, it's going to be a little, like, a lot. But, you know, thank goodness this episode kind of just jam-packed everything that you sort of know of, like Cyclops and, you know, Jean Grey and the whole, like, Nathan slash Cable situation. And then Sinister, the whole character of him. And it's so fantastic. They nailed that so well. Yeah, it's so good. I'm really excited to talk about it in detail, which is good. But that's where I'm at. I'm just curious where you
I think it's the best thing Marvel Studios has done in a while, and it's basically like came at the right time to kind of save Marvel Studios' ass a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, for a general audience standpoint, they've really, just like Jacob said the other show, they've really threw a lot of like major comic book storylines just in like three episodes, right? Like, even though they are carrying some of them out over like the whole Storm losing her powers thing, they're carrying that out for multiple episodes, right? Just like in the original animated. But still though, the Madeline Pryor thing they did really quick, right? Like, yeah. You know, Cable going to the future and all that and whatnot. They did all that in like two episodes. You know, that's crazy, man. Like, they're really like they're jamming right through like these massive like X-Men comic storylines, right? A mass audience. Unless you read the comics or you watch the anime show or you know about the X-Men, then like you have no fucking idea really what's going on. There's a lot. They've thrown a lot at you so far.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it's quite unfair, you know, because I know these stuff. So it's not like a big deal.
Could you imagine being like a general audience person with no knowledge of the X-Men at all going in and trying to watch X-Men 97 from episode 1? Like I would understand if a person like that wouldn't find episode 2 as profound as we did, right? Like, because they would maybe wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Like why it was a good episode, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was well done in general. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, like, it makes a big difference when you know the source material.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's tough for me because, like, if you've seen the live action films, like, you kind of get some of it, you know? Like, the Magneto thing is very easy to understand, I think, then. Like this episode, because like this one is like very twist, like horror kind of twisty kind of episode. Like you got clones, then you got the time travel aspect. It's like, what is going on here, you know? But then that's the great thing about the show, the fact that they are very confident and, you know, they are showing up, you know, that it's all well constructed in this 30 or 20 minutes kind of runtime. It's really impressive. I mean, yes, I agree with you, Mr. The horror in the X-Men, it's like something I wasn't expecting myself. So thank you, Ramon. You're here. I'm so happy you're here. And enjoy this review.
Oh, Raymond's here?
Oh yeah, he's in the comments right now.
Hey Raymond, what's up, brother?
Yeah, so
Raymond's just paying me back because he knows that I've been watching all of his videos and whatnot. I've actually been in his lives and his comment section a lot lately. So he's paying it back. He's paying it forward, baby. Right, Raymond?
I mean, he was already in the Street Fighter movie review. So
I know he was. I was there too.
Yeah, well, you didn't invite him.
I noticed.
See, I invited him. I was like, Roman, you should be coming in the street.
I reached out to him myself. Whatever.
Yeah. No one fucked you. You're jealous that I have a great relationship.
Or text you or whatever, whatnot about it or whatever, or something like that or whatever. You don't even know.
No. I asked him in the chat, and he say, "Oh, that's cool. I want to do it." And that's where I have to
go back and do the tape review on that shit.
Yeah.
You got Raven on that show? Okay.
Yep. That's my proudest moment in Shogun, episode what, 4 or 3? Where
Shogun.
Yeah, that's when he asked. We were talking about it. It was like,
you better step up on the panel on Shogun Chapter 7, dude, because I crushed it last week. I won the Shogun Award, just like I said I was going to. You know I did. Jasmine agreed. That I killed it on the panel.
No. Fuck you. I don't care about the points. I don't give a fuck about the points.
No, but I just killed it, though.
I said
I was going to win the you were in the chat. I was calling it out from jump before the show. I was like, I'm going to win
the show
shit on the panel tonight. And you know what, bitch? I came in and threw down. Like, mm-hmm. What's up? Right? I did.
Sure.
At the bat, when I was like, if this was the MCU Shogun show, like, Terunaga and Blackfoot would suck each other off, you know? And all the female characters on the show would just go to war and win the war by themselves. And that would just be the MCU version of Shogun. Right there, dude. That was it. I locked it down, baby.
I don't know about that. But
You're lucky that I'm not in the panel this week. I'm moderating at Chapter 7. So I'm just
having last week was Shogun, right? For Cyber, right?
I'm moderating this week, so I'm gonna have to kick ass. I did a good job moderating. I'm gonna have to fucking raise my game on my moderation level and moderate the fuck out of that. Because we're a big panel again. Imran's coming back on. Jasmine's coming back on. Jasmine did a great job. He did good. Yeah. He had some good points.
Yeah.
Rob was good.
Yeah.
Your buddy Sarin's coming back.
Oh, Sarin. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Kevin Blair, your buddies Kevin Blair coming back on. They couldn't hold back and they didn't want to get back on. They're coming back. Kevin Blair.
Yeah, you're making a big deal of it. And I'm like, okay, that's our other guests.
I know. I'm just saying, we're going to have a big panel.
Yeah, so we already have a big panel already. Like Street Fighter was a big panel. And then last week was a much bigger panel in episode 7. Episode 6.
Shogun Chapter 6, folks, our review was probably our best Shogun review out of all of them. It was really good. We had a really good review. Good episode. But so, X-Men 97, right? Really solid so far. I think the majority, I mean, the numbers have been really good. The viewership or whatever, whatnot, on Disney Plus has been really solid. People seem really excited by it. And all the episodes I've seen so far have been really good. And I've watched all the way up to past episode 4. So go ahead.
Yeah. I've seen episode 4. So far, good. Nothing has been a problem. So it's been really fun, which is good. I'm very curious how the storyline with Mr. Sinister is going to be. And that's the thing that I'm very excited about. And that's the thing that, you know, like, yes, we're jamming packed these comic book storylines, but we don't know, like, we're going to see, you know, Pryor back, you know, like we don't know if she will come back.
She will be back.
Yeah. So, you know, to defeat Mr. Sinister because of what happened with the baby and all that.
Why are you going ahead of the episode already? Wait till I want you to let me start the episode and then we'll get to that point.
Excuse me. I'm your host. I am Mr. Sinister's son. So I'm able to do it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm trying to talk to David over here.
Yeah, you're trying to multitask here, sir. Like, I'm doing the review here.
Anyway, the episode starts off, basically coming off episode 2, where like a second Jean Grey shows up at the door, right, and collapses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the beginning of episode 3, Madeline Pryor tries to scan her brain, right? Like, you know, what we don't know yet is Madeline Pryor,
we haven't figured it out yet, but we know it, right? And y'all watch the episode, so y'all know it. That was Madeline Pryor. She scans Jean's brain, which how does she even has like the telepathic abilities and all that and whatnot? I don't really even understand, because I guess that's kind of part of like her powers that she got from Sinister or whatever. But either way, she scans Jean's brain and sees all these shared memories they have and shit and whatnot together and all that, right? Sees Jean leave Sinister's lab, right? Crawl out of a test tube and find her way to the mansion. And from there, Beast uses gamma rays to isolate the hemoglobin properties of both the genetic markers of the two genes. And at that point, of course, gamma radiation that has to do with like Bruce Banner and the Hulk. At that point, he's able to go ahead and determine and figure out right off the bat that the gene that showed up and collapsed at the door and shit and whatnot is real Jean Grey by age, right? And by DNA. That the Madeline Pryor gene is too young to be Jean Grey, right? They've already been showing the old pictures of them as like the original X-Men team, right? And all that shit and whatnot, so right there, everything gets kind of awkward. Like Cyclops gets all froze up with Jean. He don't know what to say to her or do, Like Magneto even says like she's a clone, right? And it's pretty cold. Madeline Pryor stalks off with like baby Nathan and shit and whatnot, right? And we through the baby monitor in the room, we hear Sinister come in, which is really cool, right? Like it was really dope. Yeah. Early 90s. It was like a 90s baby monitor, right? Like all loud and shit and whatnot, and like big. And Sinister's voice was great. And
same actor, I think, right?
I'm not sure. Let me look.
Let me check.
At that point, Beast is also able to determine the signature on the cloning or whatever, whatnot, right? Or whatever, right? And he figures out it's Mr. Sinister, right? He's able to determine who actually tampered with the cloning and whatnot of Jean Grey, and finds the signature of Mr. Sinister, who we believe, if rumors are correct, is going to be the live action villain of the first MCU, the first X-Men MCU film that comes out, main film, which could be coming out sooner than later. But I'll stop there.
Yeah. And
before we get into the the Goblin Queen, taking over the mansion and all that shit, what are your thoughts, Andres, on that chapter, or that passage of the episode? And I left some stuff out. There's some good morph, stuff.
Morph.
Morph's great in the show, man. I love morph.
Yeah, I mean, first off,
Hold on. I got some morph.
Oh my
god. Let's call this mystery gal in the bed Jean Doe. All in favor?
Every moment is a new and shocking
hundreds. Then he started cutting up mutants, stealing our DNA to enhance himself, prolong his life. He can even take away their will. I should know.
I do not want to fight you, comrade.
I want you to fight for me.
I love that when he changed the magic. That's
yes,
dope.
My queen.
That was dope, right? I can't believe he turned into magic. I love magic.
Oh wow! It was funny. He turned into Spiral, the Mojo
Hinge. Spiral's dope too. Yeah, I like Spiral too.
Yeah, it's very funny. My favorite part was him changing to the morph, was an obsessed version when he was being controlled by Mr. Sinister during season two.
You mean the non-nine binary morph before he became non-binary?
Yeah, something like that. The little creepy eyes he has.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if people know about that, like that was his actual appearance in the comic books, because they didn't. I don't know.
Yeah. The whole, like, I mean, you don't know about the whole thing with Morph being non-binary in the show. We don't need to get into it, but he is in the show. They said that he's non-binary, and that he has
no comic books. He's not.
No, they in the show that they're making, then they made the character into being non-binary, but which is not even a real thing. You can't be non-binary. It's not scientifically real. Like, you can't be male and female at the same time, right? Like, it doesn't work that way. You either have to be male or female.
Well,
gender is binary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into it too far, but I mean,
like, non-binary is not real, so I don't really care for it, to tell you the truth.
Okay, well, I mean, the thing is,
he was never non-binary in the comics.
Well, and not even the original show. Let's be honest here. Like, I was very
surprised. And male in his form.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason they're doing that, because it's a very interesting direction with shapeshifters. You have to remember
it's woke messaging. The only reason you would add that non-binary shit and whatnot into the show and whatnot and everything is if you're trying to score political points and shit with, like, the alphabet crowd, the LGBT alphabet people.
Well, again, I don't like talking about it, but I don't think that's I don't really see that in this show. They're doing that because
not either. Just with him, that's it. Just with the non-binary, and it's no big deal. I don't mind them changing him into where he has the white looking face and all that shit. Even though in the comics he had like a regular human face, right?
It was weird. Like,
it's just weird. By making them non-binary, they're basically making it seem as if he's like both male and female, and that's just not real. Morph is not like male and female.
Yeah, the
reason that Wolverine and Morph are good friends and whatnot, everything, is because they're both guys. You know what I'm saying?
It's very weird. If we want to go too far, I mean, Mystique is kind of like not that. Nine
Barry. Oh, whatever. Either way, no, I like Magic. I like this. I like seeing Magic. She was good in the New Mutants. I didn't finish the film. I got to finish it. But when I saw of her, she was probably like the best part of the movie.
Intriguing.
Anyways, so what were your thoughts on that first chapter? That first part of the episode?
Okay. So I mean, very soap-opery, which I like. You know, the opening is kind of like, oh my god, this is another Jean. You know, and like we all knew it was going to be the clone of Jean Grey. If you didn't know about the comic books, or like if you just know in general soap opera gimmick, you know, the soap opera formula of the shows, like, you know, it has to be either a clone or some twin sister that we didn't know about. But like the fact that they made such a big deal was so funny. You know, that's like typical X-Men 90s.
It's a good way to put Sinister into the show.
Yeah. Well, let me get to that. You know, I like the way they built up to Mr. Sinister. So I really like the reveal, you know, of Mr. Sinister and in a way that it's like really dark and creepy, which is great. I really like the voice actress that does Jean Grey. She's the new actress. They didn't bring back the original.
I know.
And I she really like
politician in Canada. The chick that voiced the original Jean Grey. She's a Canadian politician now.
Yeah. Well, and she's still acting too. I don't know. Like, she's in shows that I recognize.
Is she?
She's in.
She used to be a politician. I think. I don't think she still is. But at one point, she ran for like parliament, whatever the fuck it is over there in Canada, was like a prime minister or whatever.
I think that's Rogue, the voice actress for Rogue.
No, it was the Jean Grey chick, the original Jean Grey voice actress. Look her up. She used to be a Canadian parliament or Canadian whatever.
Here, let me send it to the comments.
They actually know how their shit worked.
Yeah, I just sent it right now to you. No, it's actually actress Sam, the Kenny actress that voice Rogue. She's the one that we're talking about. That's the politician one.
Oh, really? She was a politician?
Yeah. The Jean Grey is just the actress.
That's why she didn't come back, right? Because she became an actual, like, legitimate actress.
Yeah, that's what happened. But yeah, I Yeah, Catherine Disher. That's the original actress.
Ah, yes, he's a Parliament. I knew they had a Parliament.
Yeah, I knew you were. It was correct, but I just didn't know what the name of the actress was. It's the rogue actress. Anyway, you know what's funny? The Jean Grey actress that's not in the show, she actually is married to the Professor X actor, for real. She's married to the actor from the show, which is nice.
Does that really surprise you? I mean, they worked together for years. You know what I'm saying? You know that, like, I know it's changed now more because of the culture's changed. But it used to be years ago, remember, that like most romances would happen at work.
I know.
Would meet their girlfriends and boyfriends and spouses and stuff and whatnot would be at work.
Yeah, I mean, we still see that. I mean, like,
it's not as much more now because there's so much, like, guys have to watch out. So, you know, guys worry so much more about, like, you know, you understand.
Oh, No, I understand. Well, also, folks, it's also like in general the generation, like some of them don't want to start family yet, and then, you know, some they care about more.
I used to work and shit and whatnot and everything. I used to bang female employees at companies when I worked at without hesitation.
Yeah, well, that was you. But I'm saying in general, like the population, you know, the norm of, you know, generation is usually you get married and you get kids, you know, you do that. Like, but it's no longer a thing that's like a mandatory for this generation. You know, it's not like it's a big deal. So, anyway, it's all like, you know, perspective of the generation and like how the family household has changed.
Dating advice from Andre's pop culture guy, special guest host on the MC Bleeds Report. Dating advice
by Mr. Sinister Jr. himself. Anyway, so it was really great. You know, we get the reel of Jean Grey. You know, the voice actress that's playing Jean here is really awesome, but especially in the moment when she's like, "Oh my god, I'm a clone." No, and she's like doing her, you know, dramatic, you know, dialogue, and like, and this is the best part when she looks at Scott, and like Scott is so quiet, and it's like, "Dude, you're my husband. Support me." And she grabs Nate, the baby, and he's like, "You know, if Storm was here, she's the one that would believe me." That killed me. It was so funny when she said he brings up Storm to like she would be the one that would believe her that she's the real Jean, and she walked away. That was so great. And then to end that scene, you know, wrap up my thoughts, it was really cool when we get the, you know, Mr. Sinister's voice. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they started doing that. And so that was a great way to end that, like, you know, interpol, like, twist reveal of, you know, of the clone, which is great. And the voice cast is really awesome. I mean, I love the animation here. And the fact, I like how Morph, you know, switched into some of the legendary X-Men characters that we've seen from the show or the comic books. And it's very smooth, which is great. Yeah, so I really dug the opening scene. It's really dramatic. It's very, like, it gets the plot twist, like, out of the way. And it's like, okay, this is the clone, but here we're gonna get more what we want to see with this clone, which is great.
Well, coming off that part of the episode, you know, you get basically Madeline Pryor like freaking out, having like a fucking episode, whatever, whatnot, over Mr. Sinister mm-hmm. talking to her and shit. She freaks out, turns into the Goblin Queen and shit, and starts using her powers to create all these illusions and whatnot and everything, right? Like this hell almost, right? That affects all of the characters in the X-Men. You see, Morph go in the shower and like Wolverine's in there and he turns into like Mr. Sinister and all this shit. You see Gambit go into like the Rogue's room or whatever, whatnot, and Rogue is like melting into Magneto. Bang, they're like banging or whatever, you know? Was it earlier in the episode that like they went to the danger room and Morph was like, "Oh shit, Magneto and Rogue are really working out Rogue's stamina," or whatever, whatnot, right? In the danger room, you know what I mean? So they've got this whole trope going where they've got Gambit all jealous about Magneto because Magneto and Rogue could touch. Wolverine and Bishop. Well, I love that. It sucks that we lose Bishop at, like at the end of the episode, but Wolverine and Bishop go into the nursery, Sinister, you know, like, and Madeline's powers turn Mr. Sinister into showers, like his shoulders casting a silhouette over a spider. And Morph shouts, "Not again," referring to season two when Sinister used Morph to kidnap, you know, the X-Men, Scott and Bishop, run. Everything is going crazy at this point. And like the baby's mobile turns into like a tentacle monster and starts grabbing motherfuckers up. And the teddy bear turns into like a monster. Looks like Mojo World a little bit, whatnot, some of what goes down. But coming off that, Madeline takes baby Nathan and takes off, right? And bounces, right? Doesn't she?
Yes.
I thought.
Yeah, because remember, she's controlled by Mrs. Lister.
Yeah, she has to go back. He's got like one of those jewels in her head and shit like that and whatnot, where he can control her mind and all that shit, control her actions, right? Yeah. So he takes off with baby Nathan, which is what Sinister wants ultimately. But they know where to go to find Sinister because Morph knows, right?
Yeah.
Because you know he was over there hanging out with Sinister before, after like he got iced in episode one of the original X-Men animated series. Yeah. Basically, when we get there, Sinister plops fucking Nathan into this tank of like green liquid and shit and whatnot, which I thought was fucking crazy. I'm like, what is that shit? You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously? And basically, what they decided to do with this is they decided to remove Apocalypse as being the person that gave Nathan Summers the technovirus. And they decided to make Mr. Sinister that character, right? And they changed it up. So. They changed a lot of aspects of like Cable's backstory and of Madeline Pryor's story and all that kind of stuff. But what ends up happening basically is that Magneto, you know, puts together a strike team to go and like, you know, take on Sinister, right? And save the baby and all that shit. And I'll stop there before they go to go do that and get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, first off, let me get into the combo expert. I really like that change. I think it was a really appropriate change because, I mean, we're all focusing on the Scott and Jean relationship and what's the thing that everyone knows about Mr. Sinister. He's obsessed of these two, you know, people to create the perfect mutant. Yes. So I really dug that they changed that to, you know, from Apocalypse to Mr. Sinister. So it makes sense. And I'm really excited to see that because then it'd be kind of cool.
Right? Isn't Jean an Omega level mutant?
Yes, she is.
Maybe they don't know that yet at this point, but Sinister does.
Yeah, well, Sinister knows. So that's
we need to do a character bio on Sinister. Like next time or whatever, whatnot. We need to pull up some slide shots of him and whatnot, everything, and do a comic book bio on him.
Yeah, I'll definitely put that together. That'd be very nice to kind of discuss that. So in the chat, when we're talking to Raymond, our good boy, Blues and Chill, about the horror aspect of this episode. And first,
very well done. Shut the fuck up, man. You're fucking up the show.
Yeah, Dodger. What the hell? I thought we were friends.
Goddamn dogs.
Oh my god, Dodger. Anyway, the horror aspect was totally unexpected. I was so shocked that they went with that. It was so great. I mean, the animation of the body horror was great. If you're a big fan of body horror, like myself, who loves the Cronenberg films and all that, it was really neat, and they did it so well. The Rogue and Magneto theme was so creepy, and it was so messed up for Gambit to see that. It was funny. And by the way, when they're together, they're wearing their iconic Savage Land costumes.
Yeah, from when they were together or whatever and whatnot.
Yeah. It was directly from there, which was cool that they like nod that because that's when their relationship was at that point. So that was really cool. And the Jubilee and Roberta scene, that one was really creepy. The thing coming from the TV, like. Like, that was where, like, this is where I love the show, because the animation is just so great.
I was already, by episode three, I was starting to get pissed off that Sunspot won't use his powers.
Mm.
By episode four, I was really pissed off. By episode three, though, I was already like, come on now. This is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's powerful as fuck.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got hella powers.
Yeah. I mean, he's Sunspot. So, like, okay, like, I get he wants to not reveal himself as a mutant. Like, he doesn't want the world knows about it. So, like, you know, cause he, you know, from episode one, we know that he hasn't told his parents about him as a mutant. I get that. But especially episode four, which you and I have seen recently, it is kind of annoying because he has to help, you know, at least the X-Men in some point, you know, if they're in danger, right? So, like, I don't get why, like, you're in, like, an area where no one's watching you, so use your powers. Like, he was in the mansion in this episode, so, like, why you didn't want to use your powers? It's like,
it's just like me. I mean, I've never told my parents that I do threesomes and shit like that and whatnot, you know, from time to time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, not like that, but yeah, I mean, everyone knows the point. Like, if you have a secret, it's very easy to keep a secret. I mean, I don't know why we're both there is like overthinking about this, the secret of being.
I'm just ready for him to start using his fucking powers. It's almost like Ahsoka again with what's his name not using the fucking lightsaber in that one fight.
Oh yeah, well,
that shit was pathetic. That was ridiculous.
Who was it?
Who gives a fuck? I forget his fucking name. When you stop reviewing the shows, you forget the characters' names.
Well, let me put his name up because it's gonna bug me.
It's gonna drive you crazy, huh?
Yeah, because his name was very easy to say. It's not dumb. Ezra, that's what his name.
Ezra Miller. Yeah. Ezra refused to use a lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a powerful Jedi master, so like he was still like mid-level, so like he needs to use lightsaber. Anyway, it was very stupid in Ahsoka, but anyway, and it's still stupid here in Robotus way. And then after that, you know, we get prior getting affected by Mr. Sinister's thoughts and all that, and it was really cool how she got into her costume from the comic books. It's really cool how they did that here. It's still like from the comic books, which is great. That's one thing I like about the show is the comic book accuracy of the comic.
Not as sexy as the outfit in the comics, but close.
At least it's still sexy. I mean, like they still, you know, going for it. So I at least appreciate that. I actually like this, you know, costume. So it's really great. So it was really awesome to see that. And then of course, you know, again, Morph is getting a lot of things to do here. Like, I mean, it was creepy to see Mr. Sinister coming out from Wolverine. Like, that scene, that shower scene, reminded me a lot from It. You know,
I don't know why Morph was creeping up on Wolverine in the shower like that, man.
I mean, that's his buddy. So, it's like Lethal Weapon, you know. Wolverine is Riggs.
I'm just kidding.
it was Wiggs, and then Morph is more of like,
I'm just kidding. I would want to shower too and whatnot with Wolverine. Be like, what's up, Wolverine?
Yeah, Wolverine. Yeah, that scene reminded me of the It films. I don't know, the Stephen King It, like that reminded me of that, like that kind of horror level. So like all those sequences really worked well, and like the animation level was top notch, and like it was great action scenes. Like the part where Bishop and Cyclops working together, that was a great.
Again, you're going too far. I haven't gotten to that point yet. I'm saving it. We're almost there.
Oh my God.
We're at the point where they haven't gone on the attack yet, like at Sinister's place.
No, that's not in the Sinister place. That's in the mansion.
That's not the mansion. That's at the big fight, the end fight at Sinister's like base.
No, I'm talking about the still, yeah, the
mansion when Cyclops charges up Bishop.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that is pretty dope. Yeah, but he charges up. You're right. Says thank you and all that shit, whatnot.
Yeah, I'm talking about that. I'm not talking about the mansion.
My bad. That was pretty cool. It was really good. That's so, why I said it sucks that like they lose Bishop at the end of the show. Like, I love Bishop. He's cool.
Yeah. Man. I know. That was really sad.
His powers were dope.
Yeah, it was really sad. But we'll get to that scene. But yeah, overall, I like the sequence. I love the horror aspect, and I think that's the best part about this episode is that aspect, which is great. They drop a little cool comic book reference from, you know, for the Rogue and Gambit fans. You know,
why did they make Cyclops into such a pussy in this episode? He was such a boss in like the first two episodes. Why did he have to be a pussy in this episode?
I mean, he's conflicted, dude. I mean, the fact that he's finding out that his gene is real and the gene he's with is fake, you know. So he's going through emotions, sir. So I can like at least here I can understand why he's like a little down, where in the live action films he was acting like a pussy bear. And so, you know, I don't think the show has gone that far, because Cyclops
when they do live action X-Men, they better have Cyclops like fighting dudes. Just like in X-Men 97. You know what I'm saying? Like actually shooting his blast, but like punching dudes and shit and whatnot, and like fighting, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's something that this episode does. That's
a big dude.
I mean, he is a big dude. I mean, he's very tall. He's like 6 foot, I think.
That's why Henry Cavill would actually be a good fit for him, because he's actually like a similar size. If he was to just like maybe, you know, debuff a little bit, right? Like he's a perfect height and size and build for Cyclops. Cyclops is tall and he's built.
Yeah, yeah. That is something I do want to see Hank Reveal to be Cyclops, because it makes a lot of sense. What's your thoughts on the sequence of the horror stuff and all that? I think it's really good.
I like Madeline Pryor's character, the Goblin Queen and whatnot and all that, right? Like, it was cool how Sinister was involved in it and whatnot, like taunting her and all that shit, and then he takes control of her, you know, like, you know, tells her I own you and all that shit. Playing games with her and shit and whatnot. Like, who are you? Are you Jean Grey and all this shit and whatnot? Like Mr. Sinister from the comics, you know, like all comic book like it's not good, it's not bad, like good enough to like fuck up your house and shit and whatnot and try to steal your son. I've got to like taunt you and fuck with you. You know what I mean? And be all evil and shit too at the same time. That's what Mr. Sinister does, you know? Like I said, I thought it was crazy when he stuck the baby in that tank of green fucking goo and shit and whatnot. I was like, holy fuck. You know, like, damn, like, what's up with that? That's what I knew right there. They were gonna do the technovirus.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, here we go. You know, like, technovirus. You know what I'm saying?
Because I've been rewatching the series, and they haven't gotten to that.
Why the hell would Sinister put him in that tank if they were gonna do the technovirus? Right, yeah. After Beast already like was just about done fixing Bishop's time traveling device too, right? Mm-hmm. Earlier in the episode, remember?
Yeah, I agree.
He's been working on it since episode one, you know, like he's got it all ready, like good to go. So it was just perfect timing. I liked Magneto was good in this episode. I liked the little bit we got from him. I liked that we got all the X-Men in during the horror scene and whatnot at the mansion. I liked how it wasn't real, right? Because like, you know, the Goblin Queen like casts illusions, right? I don't completely understand her powers completely, but I know that like none of that was tangible. Like the mansion wasn't destroyed or anything like that, and whatnot. You know, she gets the guy in people's heads.
Yeah, well, that's how telepaths are. Like they get into your heads and they project images around your area.
Kind of like Nightmare.
Yeah, sort of like Nightmare. So
Nightmare takes it to a different level.
Well, he takes it to another level in the dream dimension, because remember,
he's Nightmare more powerful. You know what I'm saying? He's like a demigod, you know, like underneath like Mephisto and shit and whatnot, you know? He's very powerful.
Well, sort of. I mean, Shadow King, another mutant that we haven't seen in X-Men series. If you watch Legion, Shadow King is actually that close to Nightmare in terms of powerful, like this illusion kind of creature.
Nightmare is a henchman of Mephisto's in the comics. He lords over the Nightmare realm.
Dream dimension.
Dream dimension. Yes.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
No. So. basically we get the assault on the, you know, on Sinister's complex, right? They're able to locate it, whatnot. Morph knows how to get there, you know, and they put together a strike team and they head there. They head over there to fight, take on, you know, Sinister and of course, the Goblin Queen, Madeline Pryor. And when they show up, they sort of get their ass beat. Like, because Madeline Pryor is pretty powerful, right? You know, like she even takes out Magneto, you know, like she does straight up. Like she goes one-on-one with Magneto and shit and whatnot. And she takes Magneto out. And it ends up being Jean Grey, right, in the mansion. Wolverine kind of wakes her up and whatnot, everything, you know. And Jean Grey in astral form of some kind, right, that they didn't really explain it, reaches into the situation and whatnot and everything through some kind of like mind meld with Madeline Pryor.
Yeah.
And forces her to confront, you know, all these like, you know, flashbacks, whatnot, everything, right? And all these like, you know, like, and talk, tries to talk some straight dope to her to get her to turn against Sinister, right? And stop like being all crazy and shit and whatnot, you know? Now, of course, at this point, they've also gone ahead and opened up the tank that Sinister put Nathan in, which he says right off the bat, you just doomed the child, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you knew right there he was going to get the virus. And of course, he's sick immediately. The minute they get to him and whatnot, he's all sick and he's all tetanus-virused up and shit. But it's basically Jean that saves Cyclops' life and shit and turns the tide and gets through to Madeline and gets Madeline to like switch sides against Sinister, right? Yeah. And at that point, they're able to go ahead and vanquish Sinister, who takes off and bounces. But they're stuck with baby Nathan now with the tetanus-virus, right? Which I don't know what the fuck that's about, but it's not good.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts, sir?
All that was fantastic. I mean, first off, the astral plane that we get into for Jean Grey and was really fantastic. That was my favorite part of the episode. I mean, the animation there was really great. Looking at my notes, there were great references from the comic books. Like you see briefly the cover of the Dark Phoenix saga where Cyclops holds Jean Grey in his arms. That's really cool that they recreated that image in the animation form. And of course, the first class of the X-Men. It was really cool. And seeing briefly the origin of Jean Grey, that's something that we didn't see in the show. Here, we see how Jean's powers were activated before, because her best friend, got hit by a car and her friend died immediately from that car accident, you know, and that's how Jean Grey's powers were activated because of the shock of her friend die. So it was really cool that they show that origin part of, you know, of Jean Grey, of how she became recruited to the X-Men. And plus, I love the little detail of her teddy bear. Her teddy bear she was holding was a Cyclops, and it's kind of funny. Then later on, she's going to be marrying a person named Cyclops, which was funny.
I thought you said something about titties at first.
See, folks, this is why I call him sex knowledge. Folks, you're so fun.
Is that you, Gambit? Logan? One too many redheads for you. Here, need some help for those.
This is the nightmares of all nightmares.
Always with the jokes, eh, Morph? As if I don't know. As if we all don't know.
You say it ain't so.
Get on back to the swamp with the rest of them nasty thieving critters, Remy.
I found myself a real man. A hero.
Liar. Monster.
No, not you. Not again.
One more.
Not a Lewis Carroll fan. A little help, please.
Huh? You smell like burnt hair.
Yo, Cyclops, hit me. welcome.
Oh, that was so cool when they did that. That was so badass from Cyclops. And
what about Bishop has his rifle too on his back all the time, whatnot, everything, right? His energy rifle.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's still great. That he has that. Yes, Fisher is so cool. I always love him.
Anytime you have like a shotgun or whatever, whatnot, that shoots energy blasts and shit, that's dope.
Yeah, I always like the in the live action Days of Future Past, he has that. And like he can energize it and make that like, you know, use his energy to make that useful.
That would be if they ever do the Johnny Blaze from the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider, where they were Spirits of Vengeance, and Johnny Blaze wasn't Ghost Rider, he was just Johnny Blaze as like a man, as a human being, like Ghost Rider, like as a part of the Midnight Suns. The original Midnight Suns, Johnny Blaze was a part of the team, but not as Ghost Rider. He was just a friend of the Ghost Rider. Wait, and he had the shotgun that shot Hellfire.
Oh, okay. Similar to what Bishop has. Okay.
But his shot Hellfire.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I didn't know
that. From the Hell Dimension, yep. Like that's what his and he rode a motorcycle and shit and whatnot, just like Ghost Rider and shit, and the wheels would like go on fire and all that shit. But he was just like a guy though. He was just old Johnny Blaze, but didn't do Ghost Rider anymore.
Yeah. I mean the video game also did that. If you played the game. Yeah, they did a little bit of that.
Yeah, his shotgun was dope with the fucking with the Hellfire blast and shit and whatnot.
Yeah. They did that with the live action film a little bit, like in the Nicolas Cage one, the first one.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, they did sort of that shotgun where like it was like he was like on Ghost Rider and like he pulled, you know, shot the
thing. I don't think we'll ever get that version of Johnny Blaze. I don't think they'll ever do Daniel Ketch Ghost Rider, even though that was the most popular Ghost Rider. Right, in terms of like sales of the comics and all that, and like his popularity as a character in the 90s, like during the comic boom, what was during the Daniel Ketch run, that was when he was really popular, Ghost Rider. That's when he really broke out. Yeah, when he was Johnny Blaze, even though they started out in the comics with him in the 60s, he never really caught on, you know, he was just a side character, you know what I mean?
I mean, back then,
he became a main character,
I mean, you have to remember the 90s, they were allowed to do more like horror and
they were just printing comics left and right because it was the comic book boom.
Yeah, exactly. So
but know, no, I, mean, I think that I mean you've heard the rumors that like when they do Ghost Rider in the MCU, it's gonna be Johnny Blaze. They want Johnny Blaze for whatever reason. I think they like the name Johnny Blaze.
I'm surprised we're talking about Johnny Blaze now in the X-Men review, but just
Coming off a Bishop shotgun, bitch.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, yeah, that is kind of weird that you're telling me that this was the Daniel Ketch character is the most popular.
He is in terms of like you know the comic world, like during the comic
world, right?
He was popular.
You think they're more
Ghost Rider during that whole deal where like you know, his Daniel Ketch was like an orphan. Right, and then it turned out that like his family, like you know, he had like something like in his family whatnot was connected to Ghost Rider and all that shit whatnot, all that crap. Right, they had like the caretaker character that was like the Undertaker guy, whatever whatnot. You know, like it was really interesting. The whole life. I read Ghost Rider back then, so I was really tuned into it. It was deep.
Yeah. Okay,
it went into the character than they ever had before.
That's what I mean. Like the 90s, you were able to
do more. It got to the point where, like, literally, there was another Ghost Rider that wasn't even Ghost Rider that had like his own comic.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, here's the thing: like, they can like absorb the Danny character into the Johnny Blaze. Like, that's the thing I want to remind people that there's times where no, they can do that.
I don't care how what they call him. As long as they give us a Ghost Rider, I don't care what his backstory is or any of that kind of stuff or whatever. I don't care. I just want a Ghost Rider.
Yeah, well,
and well done, Ghost Rider. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't want to get into it. No, but let's get back to X-Men 97 episode 3.
Yeah, X-Men 97 episode 3, because I don't know why we were talking about
that. Final battle.
Yeah, final battle. Yeah. Let me give a rating here because you know, we don't lose track.
You gonna do your rating? Closing thoughts.
I will say I'm very sad we're gonna lose Bishop. I thought he was a great addition to the.
Well, let me finish what happens with the episode. You finish what happens with the episode. Then, if we're gonna go ahead and do ratings, okay. Then you go ahead and wrap up how the episode wraps up and whatnot with Madeline taking off and Bishop taking Nathan and all that shit.
Yeah, I mean, all that made a lot of sense. I mean, it was kind of sad to see, you know, Pryor losing the kid. Cyclops not wanting to let go of the kid.
Yeah, very emotional. I know.
Yeah, very emotional, and I really dug that. And I think that made me really like this version of Cyclops. And you can understand why, because he felt abandoned.
Oh, yeah, his father, Corsi, or whatever, whatnot, and all that, was never around when he was a kid.
No, in the show, yeah, if you've seen the show, yeah, it's really tough for Cyclops. And
so he's with the Shi'ar Empire or whatever, whatnot, Corsair. He's really like a pirate, like a space pirate.
Yeah, he's a space pirate. He was trying to like defeat the Star Jammers, you know, the brother Xavier's love interest brother. And he was trying to stop that all by like that whole thing working, you know, because he was after the Dark Phoenix, the cosmic Dark Phoenix force, and luckily the X Men stopped that.
Everyone's along with the Shi'ar.
Yeah, I'm blinking some of the stuff here because I seen the episode where we meet the father.
Actually. No, but we do see Madeline leave, and there is a good scene with her and Jean.
Oh yeah, no, I like that scene. It's really great. And I like how she named herself Madeline, which was a really great part. I liked how they differentiate them with the wardrobe. Like you see her hair like down, and where Jane has her like up, just like in the show, you know, with the costume. So that was really neat.
And back orange with Storm.
Yeah, that one. I was surprised that we did that, but it was great. Because I think Forge and her are like a couple in the comic books, and
they are.
Yeah, and so that was really good that they said this.
In the comic book run where Storm loses her powers, that's when her and Forge get together.
Yes, if you know the stuff, yeah, it's coming along, which is great.
That's her first real love interest in the comics is Forge. Before Black Panther, there was Forge.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I never like. I mean, I like the Black Panther and Storm relationship. I never experienced the Forge and Storm relationship. I'm very curious.
It happened to the Uncanny X-Men because they became lovers. Right when she lost her powers, or I forget the name of that run of the comics, whatever, whatnot. But that it was during that run she lost her powers. That's when she meets Forge, and that's when he was leading X-Factor, right? And that's when they fall in love, and then they're together. Like off and on through the Uncanny X-Men and then into the 90s when they created the X-Men self-titled comic with the blue team that the animated show is based off of. Mm-hmm. And Forge was on the gold team with Storm.
Yeah, that I know.
He was one of them with the gold team. They had a weird roster. It was like Bishop, Forge, Storm, right? Like Iceman. Like it was strange. And then the blue team had like all the good characters, like Gambit, Jubilee, Rogue.
Rogue and who else? Nightcrawler was in it, maybe.
Nightcrawler wasn't a part of the. He was with the X Men then.
Oh yeah, because he left at that point. I think.
Yeah. No, you're thinking way before that time though. When Nightcrawler, that was like in the 80s when Nightcrawler was with the X Men.
Well, yeah. Actually, people have to understand the Uncanny X-Men is where Claremont and John Byrne were like set up the X-Men team that we know from Colossus, Storm, Nightcrawler, and Wolverine. Like that's the team that I remember.
You have to look it up. Look up who's on the blue team and the gold team. I think Colossus was on the blue team too.
Yeah.
I think what's his name? Sean Cassidy, Siren. What's his Banshee? Banshee was on the gold team. He was on the gold team. I think Kitty Pryde might have been on the gold team, but she might have been off the team too by then. in like the early 90s, late 80s. I think she might have been off the team too.
Yeah.
Because they brought her in right around the same time as Nightcrawler.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let's see here. This.
We need to iron this out and figure out who the hell's on the blue team and the gold team.
Yeah. Because there's so many members here.
In the X-Men comics, folks, they broke the X-Men up at one point in the early 90s into two teams. And they had two separate X-Men comics, the blue team and the gold team. The team you see in X-Men 97 in the X-Men animated series is based off the blue team. Go ahead, Andres.
Yeah, well, that and the Jim Lee kind of new run, just to kind of remember that.
Yeah. Because
like Jubilee was in that
team. Yeah, it was all Jim Lee, yep.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have to sort of get this.
Jim Lee did the self-titled X-Men comic run. That was him.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the blue team was consistent of Cyclops, Beast, Psylocke was in the blue team, and Wolverine and Rogue and Gambit and Jubilee. And then the gold team was with Storm, Colossus, and Jean Grey, Iceman.
Oh man, Jean Grey split up and she was on the gold team. Okay.
Yeah, and then I think I saw Archangel and Bishop were in.
Oh, Archangel was nice too. He was on the gold team. And yeah. Bishop. That's nice. Yeah. I forgot about Archangel. He was nice.
Yeah, I mean, I love Archangel. He's great. I love his design.
Wasn't he in like season 4 or 5 or something?
No, he was in the beginning. Like he's in his first season, and then he pops up here and there, you know, because
Archangel though, or is he the Angel?
In first season, he's Angel, but then he does become Archangel, and like throughout the series of the 90s, he's still Archangel.
It makes sense they would have. I forgot Jean was on the gold team because Psylocke also has telepathic abilities too.
Yeah,
she has that telekinetic sword. That she can stick into motherfuckers to read their minds and shit and all that, right?
Yeah. I mean, form into like a physical weapon as
well. Yeah. So that she would have been like that character from the blue team, right? While Jean would serve that role on the gold team.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like the team that we usually focus on the night show, which is great. Let me get into my rating. I'll give this a 10 out of 10. I love this episode because mainly because of Mr. Sinister. I think this is like a great way to introduce that character, which I love. I mean, Mr. Sinister is my favorite X-Men villain, so it was really great to see the character, the voice actor from the original show.
Why didn't you remind me to wear my Mr. Sinister t-shirt? I would have wore it.
And when are you going to get my Mr. Sinister shirt? So,
I'll get it, sir. I will jump on it.
And then we wear it together as a family.
Okay, then you remind me? Okay.
Yeah, I will. I'll remind you after the
show. I'm wearing my Takashi t-shirt and shit. I'm wearing my Naruto shit.
I mean, it's fitting. I mean, I saw him. He voiced a anime, so that's appropriate.
You know Naruto? Do you know Kakashi?
Sort of. I'm not into that show. I just know the show. So
he's the mentor of the team six or whatever, whatnot, with Naruto and Sasuke.
Sasuke and then whoever and got the third one. Yeah. So, what's your rating, sir? Episode 3.
I'll give it a 8.5. They really rushed it. Like the whole, you know, it was very emotional. Like how they sent Baby Nate to the portal and all that shit and whatnot, you know. And they're actually sending Baby Nathan to Forge, but it's not Forge from the end of the episode, which is cool. It's old Forge, who somehow is still alive and an old man. Like way in the future, like I don't know how that's possible. I can't remember, but he somehow still is. He exists in like Bishop's reality or whatever time he's from.
Episode 4 kind of confirms that, but when we get to that, I'll remind you.
Episode 4 is pretty good. I liked episode 4.
Yeah,
I like Jubilee.
Yeah, me too. I was so happy they made a centric Jubilee episode.
Hey, shout out to everybody on YouTube catching us live right now. We appreciate you. And
how many people are watching?
We're done with we got 12. We're done with our X-Men animated review. We're going to wrap up and go ahead and move on to guess what? The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, that had an $83 million budget. What do you think, Andres? $13 million an episode.
Yeah.
Did you see the money?
Yes and yes. I think this way, the show looked very like high. Well,
it was $100 million.
Yeah, it's almost $1 billion. So I think it was well spent. I think you saw the money there. I mean, especially with the guns, the army, you know, the buildings, you know, like all that. The CGI was well done. So like it definitely felt like an $82 million. Kind of,
they don't want to release the budgets for Daryl Dixon or Dead City because they don't want any of those actors and actresses to know how much money Danny and Andrew Lincoln made off of The Ones Who Live, right?
Yeah. So I have some like for Daryl, it seems like it's like $72 million at the moment that the production price for that show was.
Not a budget for Daryl Dixon.
Yeah, I just find it in Reddit because that's like the source that I find here and say it's like $72 billion. And then with Dead City, let me put it up here. I got it in notes. Bear with me, folks. I'm sorry. It's like $13 billion.
$13 billion?
Yeah. Hold on.
$13 billion on Dead City? What the fuck? $1 billion? You mean 13? No, there's no way it was 13 million for Dead City, and they spent
calm
70
down.
On Dixon.
Calm down, sir. So okay, I'm looking at the article for the Dead City. It say that it was more enough to be out looking at this city, which was reported the cost of $12 billion per episode.
So, okay, that makes sense. So around the same lines as Daryl Dixon, and so they cut it pretty much even.
Exactly. So if you look at the article, this is the article I'm looking at with the numbers here. Let me post it here.
Oh, I'll pull it up. I pissed a lot of people off in the Walking Dead private chat today when I said that I believe Daryl Dixon was better than The Ones Who Live.
That's kind of tough. For me, it's like I'm still in the
as far as season versus season.
Yeah, I mean first seasons. I mean, if we have to say like first season, I think Daryl is the better season.
That's what I'm saying. Daryl's a better show out of the Ones Who Live in Daryl. Daryl's the better series.
Yeah, but this is second.
But you know those people in the private chat, the Walking Dead chats, are gonna flip out all of that shit.
We'll see. I mean,
they don't want to hear all that.
Yes, because you're provoking them. You're saying that this is the best, you know, which I mean,
Daryl Dixon is a better series overall than this first season is than the first season of Ones Who Live. And I said, you guys aren't going to like this, but I rated the finale of The Ones Who Live 7 out of 10 because I think it had a lot of holes. The finale did. But I did say that also, though, that I thought that the secondary characters were not as well arced across the series like Daryl Dixon was. But Jadis was a standout. That actor has great chemistry with Andrew Lincoln.
Yeah, I agree.
Great, right?
It was great. I liked the main villain that we had. You know, for the time, it was really good.
Yeah, but I didn't feel they did a good job with him in the finale, Beale. I didn't like his arc. Same thing with Pearl.
See, I have a problem with Pearl. I mean, that was the one character I had a major problem. I mean, because, like, you could have gone either way to make her an ally for Rick or a main villain for Rick. And if they had continued the story, like, it could have been a long term for the character, maybe. But, again, you know, it seemed like it was a one and done thing. So like I feel like they didn't have enough time to develop Pearl into a character that was interesting, but you know, just felt rushed, you know, that's my thing. I kind of agree with you. You know, I mean, the thing is we still have our secondary characters from Daryl. Like that's the problem with the show for me with Once to Live is this, we're not going to get a second season. So it's quite unfair to like compare it to their, this, the fact that that show is going to continue on, you know.
I told you that actress that plays Jadis is great. Did you see her little blurb here?
Yeah, I need to read it, but it looks so far good.
It was always going to be Rick's story with Jadis and Michonne. Certainly, I knew it would be Jadis and Rick. And then, of course, I figured you've got to have Michonne in there. And because that hadn't happened in World Beyond, I knew that we'd still have this coming. So it was always that, McIntosh said, but it was a beautiful call from Scott in lockdown saying, we're doing that thing, but can you also do this other thing and come to World Beyond? So it was a question for me when we wrapped up World Beyond as to whether we're doing The Ones Who Live or not. It was always going to be the plan, who's wanting to see Rick, right? The question I get asked the most in my life for the last 4.5 years is, what have you done with Rick?
Yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, you kill him or you save him. But yeah, I mean, which was the worth the wait? I mean, first off, I think this was worth the wait. I think the show gave us the great reunion between Rick and Michonne. Like, for me, like, I think it is a great show. I don't care what Jeff say here.
I said I think Daryl Dixon's season one was better than this first season of The Ones Who Live. I didn't say it was a bad show. Don't say I said the show's bad.
I'm not saying that. And
I don't know what Jeff's talking about.
This series overall is good. It's not as great as the first season of Daryl Dixon. So that's it. Don't be so overdramatic, sir, in your, you know, defending of
I don't know what Jeff's talking about. I don't know.
You're talking about, oh my God. You sound like a Texas Ranger or sort.
What's the deal? Did you do some inside, like, investigative reporting and whatnot and everything and find out if they're going to do a season two of The Ones Who Live or what?
No. It seemed like this was a run-and-done thing. There's no confirmation of, like, you know, either bringing, the OG cast back together for, like, another potential spinoff or all that. So it seemed like this was, like, a run-and-done deal.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's what Jared Glassford said to me. When I went over there to Pop Culture Cosmos to do a segment of The Ones Who Live and Daryl Dixon and Dead City, he said, I don't see how they don't end up bringing them all back together. Right? Like, think about it. They're all at a point in age where, like, they can only play the characters for so long. Right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they try to, like, get the most out of the Walking Dead universe and get them all together in some kind of, like, big final season of some kind of, like, where you get them all there. Right? And you get Alexandria in there too, whatever, whatnot, something like that. They might make it up. They might do another season of The Ones Who Live. They could. Yeah.
I mean, they could. I mean, again, this show done a really good job of leaving the doors open still for, like, this show to come back. I mean, it's never say never.
They rushed that finale so quick. I didn't even see the airdropping of, like, the helicopters at the end there, the ending to, like, all the different, you know, camps or whatever, whatnot, over in Alexandria with the supplies and all that shit and whatnot that they did there at the end. I saw that, like, on a review video.
Yeah. I mean, it's very quick. I mean, the thing that doesn't help is they have a announcer, like, the newscast to, like, explain what was going on to, like, so, like, it was just, like, a lot going on in that final scene.
I know. They really, like, I didn't like that time jump.
Yeah, so let's talk about the ending. I do, like, I still have the same feelings. Like, yeah, the rushing of, like, the final moments is really bad. Like, I mean, first of the timeline, it's kind of confusing. Like, how long it's been since that, like, bombing of that, like, you know, the strike team and through Michonne and Rick going back to, you know, seeing their kids. Yeah,
we have no idea how much time passed over whatnot and all that. You'd have to think it would take a lot of time to get shit all straightened out with, like, Philadelphia to get, like, take over the CRM and all that shit and whatnot. There would still be other soldiers you'd have to deal with and whatnot and all that. So it's just like they really rushed it. It surprised me. It was almost kind of like Dead City, right? Like, in a weird way.
Yeah, in a weird way. Just like this, like, not taking your time to, like, you know, see, like, the reputation of the CRM being, like disable someone in that section of that area, well, right?
They had that great fifth episode with Jadis and Father Gabriel and all that shit, right? To have an episode like that, to set up a finale like that, I'm sorry, but it just caught me off guard.
I mean, I don't know.
They still had us stuck to the story at that point with Jadis and Father Gabriel. It was very internal at that point still, right? You still were like, you're really like, as an audience member, you were really woven into the fabric of the show, you know, even though we know what's going on with Pearl, right? There's sort of these loose ends going on, you know what I mean? But still, you have a vibe going into episode 5 where you're thinking, okay, they're definitely making a second season. They are. There's no way they're not making it because there's too much to do with the CRM and all that and whatnot to do it in one episode. We said that.
Yeah, and also with the article I just sent you for the Hollywood Reporter, the thing that we also had to bring up was Morgan, because Morgan left the Fear of the Walking Dead earlier, and we need to pay off that. So, like, I'm kind of curious, like, if we get a season 2, like, that needs to be, like, the next thing they have to do is, like, get Morgan to meet, you know, with Sean and Rick at some point, and, you know, that's the only way you can see a second season to come around. And in that article, with the Hollywood Reporter I read, like they all in game to come back to do more stories together. So
they can do anything with a second season. They can do anything. Oh,
yeah. So it's very sad that we rushed to like wrap up the CRM. But then at the same time, I brought up last week in the finale, there's a lot of the comic book story arcs from The Walking Dead that they maybe haven't adapted yet to, like,
what if they rushed it to bring them all together down the road? What if that's the main goal? That is the main goal, is to tie all the shows together.
Yeah, we'll see.
If they did that, Andres, it would drive the fucking Walking Dead people, their fan base would drive them nuts. If they brought them all together and whatnot and everything for some kind of like final season of some kind of show or some shit.
Yeah, I know. Maybe in Daryl Dixon. Because I mean, right now, like, Daryl Dixon is so far the one that's been the most successful. So, like, if we get a third season,
the most highly reviewed Walking Dead shit ever since The Walking Dead.
Yeah, exactly. So, if they are going to do that, it makes sense to do it in Daryl Dixon. We're going to do it with Carol next season, which is great. If the second season is great as the first season, I can see Rick and Michonne and Morgan to come back in Daryl Dixon for like a third or maybe like a potential multiple season and to build up like an in-game Walking Dead moment. So I think that it could happen, you know, to tie all this up, you know, because, you know, there's things that they don't know. Like, they don't know about the whole, like, French operation theme, you know, experimenting the walkers, you know, thing. So, like, that's a lot of potential to, like, you know, bring in the next season of the ones who lives, and, you know, and they
would, I don't see why they would do a second season of the other shows and not do one for the ones who live.
I know. They're waiting their time. Like, I wonder what's the ratings were.
Oh, yeah, we know they're gonna wait. They're gonna wait. We know that.
Yeah, what they're trying to do here. They're trying to do like the Endor thing where
again, because these actors and actresses, like, they're getting older, you know, yeah. And they've already been attached to this IP for so long, you know, like,
yeah, like, here, Andrew Lincoln is like 50 right now, and what else? Let me pull this up. He is also, Danielle Greer is like 46 right now. So, I mean, they are kind of reaching that point, but
yeah.
It's kind of like, I can see them doing like at least two or three more times. That's it.
You know what I mean? To play Daryl Dixon forever.
No, enough. No, if he gets money from them, then he's fine. He's not going to complain. So,
he hasn't really aged. So, he can be Daryl forever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Let me pull up his age because I am now curious. Hold
on. He's in his late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, 55. 55 years.
He's been in the game for a long time. He's older than Negan. He's older than what's the name that plays Negan?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah. I think Jeffrey Dean Morgan is like 40 around there. I think. No. Jeffrey D is actually older than Mr. Reed. He's actually 57. He's 57, 55 for Norman, and then 50 for Andrew Lincoln as Rick.
And what about what's her name that plays
Maggie
Green?
Lauren Cohen is like 42, so she's like younger than Daniel Gurria.
Yeah.
And, let me pull out there was the other actor I'm looking. Carol, the actress that plays Carol. I think she's still young. Melissa, she's 58. So she's actually the oldest of the bunch of the looking at actors.
What about that really important character, for that secondary character from Dead City that helped write the show?
Oh my god, no. I'm not checking what was it, Janine or
Jenny.
Jenny. I think Jenny is like 2, and she's like in a 15-year-old body.
Nobody gives a fuck about how old Jenny is.
Exactly. So I'm not gonna do that.
I hope Jenny got bit by a walker.
Oh my god. See, next season, if they ever do a Dead City, if we get Dead City season 2 and the
right now.
Yeah. But we don't know when they're coming out. At the end of the year, whatever. If they are gonna do it, right, they have to kill Jenny to make me very happy. Because that's going to be out. Yeah.
Really kill her. I want to watch her die.
Exactly. And then that was worth the pay.
Like, you just start the first episode right off as like a way to like cleanse the first season. Kill Jenny.
Yeah, like we open up a raid, like a dark and moody setting. It's like Negan is like crying for some reason, and like it gets flashback of the walkers chasing him, and then it's Jenny, and like Jenny died to save Negan.
Apparently, they're casting a bunch of different actors and actresses to come in and play new secondary characters in Dead City.
Yeah, probably. Because for the Dead City, right, in New York, and then the one for that, like, the Sheriff's, like,
Boston,
right, where the Sheriff is at, like, because we know that there's communities, like, going, so it makes sense we see some of them, so.
Yeah, most definitely, and, as far as The Ones Who Live goes, good season, not too happy with the finale. Great season, though, right? Episodes 1 through 5, great. Finale, 7 out of 10, baby. There's a reason why I dropped that 7 out of 10. Just some inconsistencies there with the story. And, they rushed it a little bit. They kind of rushed it. But we don't know what the grand plan is. We don't know.
Yeah. I still stand for my... Was it my 9 out of 10 thing? I think it's okay finale. I think for me, I just focus on the Rick Michonne relationship.
I really enjoyed watching the episodes. I really enjoyed watching them.
Yeah, they're great episodes. They're joy to watch. They have great running time. They were paced well. Like, that's why it's kind of weird with the finale. It was kind of a little off in terms of the pacing, but. I mean, for me, I really care about just the Rick.
You don't care about Rick with the grenade. That was bullshit.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was just dumb shit there.
I don't know why the fuck they did that. That came out of nowhere.
Well, first off, like, we didn't discuss this. I didn't discuss this, but like, you need to pull the grenade away from you because if you can hit by
shrapnel. Like, how the fuck does that not like blow you up too? And not only that, but like, Okafor said that the CRM was the biggest military in the world. Beale said it was the biggest military in the world. How would blowing up just like all those soldiers that were at that one ceremony, like, destroy the CRM?
I don't know.
The CRM was bigger than that. I don't know either. Let's talk about Supergirl.
Yeah.
Mr. Supergirl. I'll pull up your article. This is your Mr. DC. Andres handles the DC show over here, folks.
Yes. So
he is Mr. Supergirl.
So recently, in last week, or how many weeks, we got our confirmation of a director that's in talks to take the Supergirl film. This is Greg Gisbap, a great Australian filmmaker who has done a couple of great films. I Time, the skate crime thriller that was starring Margot Robbie that got Allison Janney the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. He also did the Disney remake of Cruella for Emma Stone that did very well during the pandemic. So he's a really fantastic director that has done a really good job of female-focused kind of films. He has worked with the top actresses, you know, Emma Stone and Margot Robbie, which is great. So the fact that he's in talks with doing this film is fantastic. I really enjoyed this pick of the director that is going to direct the Supergirl film. I love Supergirl, and I really want this movie to exceed, and they have the right director here. He also did the Sebastian Stan Hulu show, the Tom show, that was the Pamela Anderson, that sex tape that happened with Pamela Anderson. Great show. He was involved with that.
Yeah, but Tom. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so he's a really great pick for that. Yeah, Pam and Tommy. That was the show I was talking about.
He was interviewed and asked if he would ever be interested in doing like anything with DC, anything superhero related. And he said that he would only want to do something that was like dark.
Yeah, like the Joker or the Penguin. And if you saw the interview, I heard that, and that was a really great answer.
I wonder, right? Like, you know, what is Gunn doing with this Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow film? Like, how dark is he going to go with it? What, not that he brought Glepsy in and was able to attract him to even want to direct the film, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense if you know Supergirl as a character. She's a very different type of character than Superman. Superman is the light. Supergirl is kind of dark if you read her comic books. Like, she does go to dark places, and especially the Woman of Tomorrow. I actually have the comic book, Jeff, the graphic novel that this movie is based on. Really great read, and that is very dark and like very like how do you say it, like Conan the Barbarian, rare art type of kind of story. So I can see why they like he was probably intrigued about this story with Supergirl and this. So I think this is a great pick. I think this is a really potential great superhero, a female superhero film. I think he's very much that like character driven film. I think this is going to be the best character driven DC film since what, like Wonder Woman / the Joker film, since the Batman in 2022. So I'm just very excited for this director to be in talks and get this job, because it's just very important to get this film to be right, you know, and general the DC stuff going in the right direction, you know.
No, I agree 100%.
Yeah, so that's really great. Nothing else. I think this is a good pick. I think Gunn is it's actually, you know, speaking of the schedule, it does seem like this movie is gonna be like ready to be shoot in maybe next year. And I saw another article that it could release after the Superman film. It could release in 2027. It could make sense. The fact that this project is kind of getting accelerated so fast in terms of production. You know, we got the actress now. Soon we'll probably get this director, and then soon we'll probably get a supporting cast for the Supergirl film. So that makes sense.
Well, separately.
So, yeah. I know there were other news that we could have talked about. I mean, 2 weeks ago, there was a lot of trailers we could have talked about. There was like the New England trailer that happened, which we'll maybe talk later on. But yeah, but this was the big news that I saw. Like, we need to talk about this, you know, DC news, you know?
Of course, sir. We need to cut that. We need to cover DC news. We do.
Yeah. I know the Penguin trailer came out, but it wasn't like, it was like, it didn't show like any exciting footage. I mean, which I was kind of surprised they didn't show the Penguin with his hat and his umbrella, which we saw in leaks. So it was kind of weird. But anyway, I'm very excited for this year. Like, I'm so excited we get the Penguin show coming soon. I'm so excited to get the Joker. Tomorrow, actually, before we hang out, tomorrow, watch out for the Joker 2 trailer coming out. I heard that it's coming out probably tomorrow. So I'm I'm very excited to see that trailer. And because that's the only DC film we're going to get this year, just like Deadpool 3 for Marvel. So
yeah. Yeah, the Batman 2, the Batman 2, they pushed off the release date on it.
Yeah, the update for that, folks, that's going to be in 2026. They're going to do back-to-back.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm excited.
Back-to-back. I know, but that's a long time in between movies.
Yeah, I am kind of sad, but then...
My son's going to want to be casting his own Batman, too, in his own universe and all that, you know?
I'm trying to figure out if they want to wrap up this version quickly and get...
Nobody knows for sure, but all the rumors are is that Gunn's going to want to cast his own Batman.
Yeah.
Mold and all that and whatnot. He's not going to use...
No. I'm not saying he's not using Mark Fans. I'm just saying that they want to wrap up the trilogy of the Bat Reeves and like move on to the Brave World to find a new actor. Like,
I don't think it's going to be a trilogy. It's always been reported that it's that all there is the second film.
I don't know. You know this. Here, I should pull an article here for you because they
want to wrap it up for Gunn's DCU, so Gunn can cast his own Batman.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Matt. Yeah, I'm just talking about the Matt Reeves one here. Let me do this.
No, there's never been talks of a trilogy.
Not for the DCEU, but for the Matt Reeves, yes.
No, for not even for Matt Reeves. There's never been talk of a trilogy.
Really?
This is the second film. Is all they've ever mentioned.
Well, I mean, yes, now, but like, he is guaranteed to do a trilogy. We're not yet up to that point.
He never signed a contract for 3 movies. He signed a new contract to do Batman 2.
I will differ because what I heard initially, he is going to do a trilogy. Well, where are you getting that from? Because
they never hired Matt Reeves to make a trilogy with that that Batman. Because, again, because of their own money woes and whatnot, everything, they really weren't sure how well it would do.
How well it
would be received with patents and whatnot and all that, right? They weren't willing to just invest on, you know what I'm saying? That's the only reason why all they've reported wanting to do is a second film, and then Gunn took over DC. So it became, at that point, it became apparent that Gunn would want to cast his own Batman.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, okay, I get that point.
Doesn't that make sense? So why would you try to compete with that Batman with a trilogy of the Batman?
Yeah, well, I mean...
You don't need to report that. It's just common sense.
Yeah. Hold on. Where's it? I'm trying to find my notes here. Check. I just think that, sorry, folks. I was trying to find something. I don't know. Like that's the whole problem with this multiple Batmans. It's like we've got the Joker movie going on right now, and we have another Joker in the Batman, and the Batman, the first one, did very well. It crossed over 700 billion. So it's kind of the tough position for Warner Brothers that they have to continue with this franchise, that version for 3 films, So, I mean, people understand that, the DC, this new Batman for the universe is going to be different from the Robert Pattinson one. So I'm going to say it's going to happen. What I heard initially, it's going to be they're going to shoot back-to-back of the Robert Pattinson Batman films now for 2026 and 2027. I'm trying to find an article from thebatman.com that I saw that they kind of explained this. in detail what they heard. And so, but that's all that. But we need to get everything confirmed. Like, that's the thing. It's like, all this is like old rumors and all that.
It so, is.
You know, but yeah, it's, I agree with you, Jeff. I mean, it is kind of weird. You know, you don't want to overstep, you know, the new Batman that we're going to get.
You don't want to have three Batmans. Two Batmans, you know what I'm saying? Well, now we've already been there, kind of. You know what I mean? And whatnot. It's weird.
Yeah, I do not want the
situation. You got to get down to one Batman.
Yeah, I agree. I do not want the situation with Ben Affleck where he didn't get his like solo film. That was a huge problem with the DCEU, is that they never got their Batman to have the solo film. So I don't really want that situation for James Gunn. So, but we'll see. What else? Like, was another news besides that? I'm trying to figure out any Marvel news. I mean, it's been really quiet.
No, let's get out of here and call it a night. We got other shows to do this week. We got Shogun.
Yeah, which I'm going to be in. Just remember, folks, I'm not going to be in Friday's The City Slickers 2. So I'm going to be in the Shogun episode 7 review. So that's really it. So, yeah.
That's it, sir?
Yeah, that's it. So I think we could get out of here.
If you say so, sir.
Yes.
I'm busy. Anyways, folks, we love you out there. God bless you. MCU's Bleeding Edge Report, X-Men Episode 3, The Ones Who Live, Supergirl, The Woman of Tomorrow. We out. Peace. Yeah. Hey.